I can do the full half hour and okay. pretty slow this afternoon.
It's 1:40 now, so.
Yeah, that's fine. So if we get out of here by about 2:15 or so.
Okay.
Yeah,
great.
That's good.
I'm going to just start that over. What I'm going to do is have this out so I can... Welcome to the John, Paul, and Mike Show. John, good to see you, buddy.
I don't recognize. Who are you?
I don't know.
It's been several months.
Who's this? I'm pointing at Mike right
what
now.
What are we doing?
I don't know. We're kickstarting a new season because we're going to be like television where you take a break every once in a while.
What a great idea. Yeah. So that sort of explains why we got busy.
Since January, we haven't done an episode, so... Yeah. Anyway,
well, it's really weird, Paul. You're Paul, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Because people.
You're Mike.
Because people on the street say, "Where? What? What? Why aren't you broadcasting?"
And the answer is, we're not making enough money doing the show. So go to patreon.com/John Paul and Mike and contribute to our monthly fund, which at the moment, I checked before you started, we're getting $0 a month right now. So,
excellent. Well, that's that's really sustainable.
So you can be the very first listener. All right.
All right. Okay. Well, anyway, I missed having fun with you.
Yeah. We'll chat.
I miss having fun with you.
We'll chat some more at the end.
So our guest hasn't left yet.
And she hasn't.
No. Yet. But she's about to. We don't get serious.
She's on a tight leash. So I would like for this, you to introduce our esteemed guest, John.
All right. Well, first of all, Paul, it's good to be back.
Yes.
It's good to be back. And interesting, you know, watching the different new mayors try to do whatever they think they were elected to do. And it does appear that at the forefront of most of their agendas is something to do with housing, whether it's workforce, whether it's affordable, whether it's housing of any kind, it's right at the top. So I thought we should start off the year by inviting an expert on this topic, someone I've known for a while. Her name is Shannon Renaud. And Shannon can explain in more detail the expertise of where she garnered it, what she did, but essentially has been involved with this housing-related issue with the Chamber of Commerce in a policy capacity, I believe at a national level in some capacity, can explain that. Obtained her graduate degree specifically on this topic. So I think it's worthwhile getting some facts out around this issue, because I think there's not many out there.
I'm not really a big fan of facts. I'm more a rhetoric guy.
Sorry.
But actually, I think you're right. I think it's a good idea to consult with the experts from time to time. So thank you for coming, Shannon, and welcome to the show. It's been a long time since I've seen you. I think it was Chamber Days.
Yeah, that's right.
Which was
a few years ago.
Wow.
Yeah.
Anyway, great to see you.
Thank you.
And thanks for coming on our podcast. Why don't we start by telling us the story that John told, but with actual
details. Yeah, the much better, accurate, factual introduction.
Okay, so part of my interest in terms of the issue of housing certainly came out of my work with the Chamber of Commerce, and that was when I first started looking at the issue of housing from a business perspective, an economic development perspective. I'm also very well versed in the housing issues from a social service perspective. I'm on the board of Our Place Society, and of course we work in the area of transitional housing as one of the things that we do for the very hard to house in our region. And so housing is a broad continuum of needs, right from, you know, folks who are unfortunately homeless up to the piece that we want to talk about today, which is workforce housing. So in my experience in looking at this, and certainly in my policy work, it's the piece about workforce housing that is missed in our region in particular. Mm-hmm. So I want to talk a little bit about what that is.
Well, and it for some reason, it appears to be the rhetoric, in sort of your specialty, Paul.
When I say that, I should clarify. What I mean is when people talk about housing in this region, they talk about homelessness.
That's right.
And I think that it's a much bigger issue than just that.
Well, and but it's because because you're employed and because you're making some money, somehow or another locally, that means you're okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, where in fact you are not.
Yeah.
And so it's hard getting politicians' interest.
Yeah.
Because you're not starving. You're not. You don't. You might. You live somewhere.
Yeah.
You're
right.
Working.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yet somehow or another, that's not. You know, the fact that you can't buy a house.
Yeah.
Ever.
a fifth of the children in this province live in poverty.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know.
Despite
so,
having, we know that it's higher than 80% of kids that live in a home. Somewhere.
So the one thing about that is that the issues related to workforce housing, and my area of study expertise in particular is home ownership as compared to the rental tenure, but I'll touch on both of those pieces. But you're quite right, John. The issue is that it's not as visible as some of the other housing issues in the lower income range of the continuum. So while we talk about affordable housing, we often do not reach the piece of the conversation that has to do with the workforce. So we talk right. about affordable housing as housing that costs about 30% of a person's income. So your housing costs don't exceed 30% of the income. And that's fine. That's a sort of a standard internationally accepted definition. But when we talk about workforce housing, it's taking that and it's applying it to the portion of the population that is earning between 80 to 200% of the area median income. So we're not talking about necessarily the very poor. We're talking about the average Joe and Josephine when it comes right
the
down
middle
to
class?
The middle class.
Oh.
And a number of cities in Canada, certainly not Greater Victoria, but a number of cities in Canada are including solutions to address the challenges of workforce housing in the home ownership tenure as a part of their continuum of housing services. Yes, they deal with homelessness and transitional housing and you know, low-cost rental, but they also deal with home ownership for workforce housing, and we do not. And I see that actually as a fairly significant economic development issue because we're not a cheap place to live.
Can I just clarify? Do you mean the province or do you mean the local governments?
Well,
there are
examples of specific municipalities within BC that are very actively addressing
okay.
this, and Whistler is a very good example of that.
Right.
The province actually does have a priority to address housing affordability
okay.
in their provincial housing strategy, and they have policy frameworks and programs that will facilitate organizations and municipalities that want to get into that sphere and address housing affordability in the homeownership tenure. We, in Greater Victoria, have not done so. But there is no policy encumbrance to do so.
Yeah. It's the weirdest thing.
So given that this is such a huge issue, sorry if this is too political
now.
No,
that's fine.
Given that this is such a huge issue and like everybody knows this, what the heck's going on? Why haven't we done this?
Well, that, Paul, was precisely the question I asked. Thanks for that.
I didn't feed her that question.
Yeah,
I was legitimately wondering.
Okay, hold on.
Yeah.
So for the 11 people who are listening,
yeah.
maybe 12.
It might be
by
the end of now because yeah. it's been a few months.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That was not prescriptive.
It was not prescriptive.
No, but it is an obvious conclusion
yeah. well, and
out of the statement. Why aren't we treating it as an economic development issue?
And I'm sorry, I'm just trying to wrap my head around this, John, because we've talked about this a lot. I didn't know this.
Yeah.
And, you know, we know homelessness has been a huge issue, and lots of local governments have strategies and mayors' commissions, and you know there's the society that was set up to end homelessness, and so we know that this is a huge issue. We also know that the issue of home ownership, or at least you know being housed, is also a huge issue in our region, and so I'm stumped at why there hasn't been a public strategy
yeah.
around this.
Yeah.
Well, so one of the things that I'd like to talk about why we have a home ownership problem in the first place and some of the consequences related to it, and then maybe I can get into what's going on in Greater Victoria in this
sphere. If we can hold Paul back.
Yeah, it's
going to be hard.
I have my own preconceived notions, so
it's been a couple of months where we haven't had a chance to go at the mic.
I'm going to go 15 seconds with my preconceived notions, and you can shatter them all.
All right.
We live on an island everybody wants to live on, and so the rich people are driving up all of the house prices.
Okay.
That's one preconceived notion. Number two would be there's clearly no public strategy to deal with this issue. Which I just added to the list recently.
Okay.
So, yeah, that's all I got.
That's all you got?
That's
okay.
all I got.
Yeah. I'll give you a few more.
Okay.
I would certainly agree that because we're a desirable location, that pushes the demand factor. I mean, a house in the ownership tenure, well, in the rental market too, I mean, it's a commodity, right? Mm. So it's subject to the forces of supply and demand.
Of course.
So on the demand side of things, there's a number of factors that have contributed to affordability decline in the home ownership tenure, and some of them are demographics.
Mm-hmm.
People do want to move here. We also have other sort of more other major demographic factors. We have seniors that are living in their homes longer and healthier, so therefore they're not vacating their homes and providing supply through going into more resident or more care facilities.
Right, right.
So that's one factor. We have
or downsizing.
We have a fairly high divorce level in Canada. So where you had a household that has two parents and two children needing one house, they now need two houses.
Mm.
So that's a demand factor issue.
Right.
We have immigration. You know, we're pushing for more immigration in Canada, which I'm not disagreeing with, but that's also a demand factor. And then on the other side, there's things like favorable banking rates, so money is cheap, so
mm-hmm.
more people are getting
drives
into the market.
The
so there's a number of things. And then on the supply side, you know, sort of working against the increased demand, there's land costs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everybody, land costs are going up. There's restrictive planning regulations. You can only build in this area, and you can only build this high, and, you know, also all of those sorts of things. There's the expectation that housing development should pay for community amenities. And when that happens, mm-hmm. when a housing development has to pay for a number of community amenities, then that cost goes into the cost of the housing and
right.
increases the prices. And then, of course, there's all of the overlay of taxes, federal, provincial, and municipal taxes, property transfer tax, there's GSTs, there's municipal levies that go into all of those things increase the cost of housing whilst you have an increased demand. So those are a number of factors that have driven the cost of housing.
Hmm.
So in that, can I talk a little bit about
please.
What's going on in Victoria?
Yeah.
So I looked at that thing and I started talking to a bunch of different players, if you will, that are involved in this issue. So I did a whole bunch of interviews with different people involved in the housing issues. I talked with
just to say why.
Why?
This was towards a graduate degree, right?
Yes, it was.
So
thank you.
Yeah.
So I was doing my master's degree, my master's of public administration, and in completing that, you need to do a fairly significant research project related to a public issue.
Mm-hmm.
So I work closely with the Saanich North Sydney Industrial Group because one of the concerns of the industry group is the affordability of housing and how that factors into the ability of those companies to attract workers,
right.
attract and retain workers. I mean, people want to live close to where they work. And not being able to live close to where they work means they live further away, which means their transportation costs go up. So it just makes everything more expensive.
Right.
Makes it difficult to attract and retain. So I wanted to take a look at that question. And in doing so, I wanted to do more than obviously just look at the research, but to talk to folks here and see what's going on. So I did 20 interviews, and I talked to nonprofit housing providers in our community, very prominent nonprofit housing providers. I talked to governments and institutions such as BC Housing, CMHC, the Real Estate Association. I talked to developers. And I also talked to seven different organizations across Canada who are currently providing home ownership programs. And that was a couple in BC, actually, Whistler and Langford. Just so you know.
Very similar.
Whistler and Langford, I
talked to. Stu will build a mountain. What's the problem?
It's already there. It's called Bear Mountain.
That's true.
Skiing's not as good. Anyway.
I talked to three different organizations in Alberta, one in Saskatchewan and one in Ontario, to see what they're doing, because they're all doing something.
Yeah.
But in Victoria, the interesting piece that I've found is that the conversation about workforce housing isn't even in the same ballpark as it is in the rest of the country.
Hmm.
So the rest of the country has embraced the fact that workforce housing for a median income earner is an important part of the housing continuum, and it is a key plank in an economic development strategy.
Yeah.
We haven't done that. Although we say we've done that, like okay. If you look at CRD policies and you know different housing policies of our municipalities, they talk about workforce housing as a policy priority. But yet when you dig down into how they define that, they don't define it the way that it is academically defined or the way that it is defined and implemented anywhere else in Canada.
Hmm.
So academically, as I was saying, workforce housing affordability is about housing that is affordable to that portion of the population that is making 80 to potentially 200% of the average median income. When it comes to housing programs, they often narrow that down to about 80 to 120%. But the point is, it's not low-income earners.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
So in Victoria, in Greater Victoria, if we were to take that number and to think about who is that in Greater Victoria, the income bracket would be somewhere between, I think it's about $65,000 to $90,000 a year. So households that are
so
making...
So about a third what John makes.
Yeah, we're not
in
talking
a decade.
About
in a decade.
So it would be sort of that income bracket of household. Now, okay. When you dig into our workforce housing policies in the CRD, we're actually talking about households that make less than $50,000 a year, with a special preference for households that make even the lower end of that. So while our region says we're addressing workforce housing, the actual definition of their policies is such that no, we are not.
No.
We are addressing affordable housing for low-income earners.
Right.
We are not addressing affordable housing for the average income earner, which is workforce housing.
Well, this is more for John's consumption than yours, Shannon. But you know, this has been what I've been saying for a long time. The middle class is getting squeezed down, yeah. Right? It's not. It's squeezed out. Yeah, or squeezed. down to the lower class, right? And we see this with MSP premiums, right? If you're making $30,000 a year, you get nailed for the full rate of, as though $30,000 is a lot of money. But if you're making, $25,000, then you get all sorts of grants and subsidies and everything, right? And it's not to say that you shouldn't help the people who are at the bottom.
Absolutely.
But why are we crushing the people that are right above the bottom? That's the part that I've never really fully understood.
That's right.
Yeah.
And just to clarify, this is not to say that we shouldn't be helping individuals that need have more housing need. The point is that we're not exercising attention along the full spectrum.
Exactly.
I've
been saying that. Yeah.
And our competitors are. So when I talk about our competitors, I'm talking about cities like Calgary and Saskatoon,
right.
That are growing economically.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they're trying to attract the same workers as our companies.
Plus,
are.
Business regionally is crying out for a solution to this problem.
Right. Yeah.
So business is, and for whatever reason, that doesn't seem to resonate with the local politicians who are now seeming to refocus their efforts on economic development.
Mm-hmm.
Well, frankly, if they dealt with this one issue, we might solve the whole problem.
Well, it would certainly be helpful. And I mean, some folks that are listening, and certainly in the course of my research, I heard feedback like, why should we? Why? This is not an issue. There are more pressing needs for, poor people. And, and we shouldn't
be
putting any of our attention here. And I think that while I don't disagree that there are pressing needs, I think that having all of our attention in that portion of the spectrum – to the exclusion of workforce housing is rather short-sighted. And there are some, you know, some very tangible consequences of not paying attention to the issues related to not being able to get into the housing market. And some of those are, as we've noted, the availability of workers. And so, you know, an automatic retort is, well, why don't they just rent? And they can. But the fact that a lot of people can't get into the housing market is also putting upwards pressure on rental costs.
In fact,
the rate of increase in rental costs in British Columbia is ridiculous, partially because people can't get into the homeownership market.
Well, I didn't know that.
No, this is very simple economics, right? Because, you know, a few years ago, everybody's building houses with suites. Because you build the suite, you can rent out the suite, and that'll help pay for your mortgage, right? This is standard practice in this region, especially in municipalities that don't allow suites. However, it's simple mathematics. If you're paying, you know, $3,000 for your mortgage and there's a two-bedroom suite below, you're going to be charging $1,200, $1,300 rental for that suite. And the more the houses cost, the more you're going to be charging for, you know, it puts upward pressure. Obviously, you can't go too far above market, but every new place that gets built adds, you know, another rental suite, but it adds another expensive rental suite.
Well, and the other thing is, too, is that young people who eventually, many of them, want to get into having ownership, a home of their own, they're okay in the first part of their careers in a rental market, right? Mm-hmm. You know, you're trying out your job, you're honing your professional expertise, you're finding out if you really want to commit to this town, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But the research has shown that after a while, and that while is somewhere around 5 years or so, when a young person has been in their career, they're starting to feel like they're going to put down roots. And part of that feeling of putting down roots is I want to buy my own home.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a risk point for companies.
Yeah.
Because that's when people say, I want to buy my own home, but I can't buy it here.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to move over there
and
take my great skills that I've built up in this company, market them somewhere else, and buy a home there. And might I say, another complicating factor, and sorry, I'm slipping back into factors instead of consequences here, is that British Columbia, on average, makes less money than we do in Alberta or than we do in Saskatchewan.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
So
the incomes.
We make less money.
Yeah.
Housing is
more
less expensive in other places.
Yeah.
And they have programs to address workforce housing.
Okay, so let's talk about that. Okay, so we've clearly identified a lack of priority to this issue. Okay, so if one of these municipal councillors were listening, maybe lack of some kind of innovative solution to the problem is missing. So what can you refer to what's happened across the country? So maybe there's two or three instances where they go, maybe we can take that and run with it.
Yeah, because I'm befuddled. I'm like, you know, I'm frustrated knowing that there is no strategy, but then I'm thinking, what would the strategy be? How can the government, you know, usually when the government says
price controls.
Usually when the government says they're here to help, they actually create more problems. But I'm curious to know what the policy solutions around
could
this
be.
that have maybe worked.
Okay. Yeah. So I mentioned that I talked to 7 different housing providers across the country that are working quite actively and very successfully in the realm of affordable home ownership programs. And really, there's sort of 3 factors that have to go into a successful home ownership program. And those are that the program has to address the needs of the community, which means that there has to be a built-in mechanism to sustain the affordability of this housing in the ownership tenure. It has to address the needs of the purchaser, which means that notwithstanding notwithstanding the fact that I might be getting some assistance to get into the market, I still need to have some opportunity for equity building, right? Mm-hmm. And it needs to address the needs of the organization, which means that however the program is structured, it has to be sustainable for the organization,
right?
You can't be constantly having, you know, government money thrown at something, because that's not sustainable, as we know.
Right.
So there's basically there's two primary approaches to doing this, and I know you made a joke about it, but price controls is one of them, and another and what that is, and actually that's what's used in BC. And what that is a it's called a covenant it's a restrictive covenant on the homeowner to restrict the amount that they can sell the house for back into the marketplace.
Oh, I see.
So if they're participating in a program where they have some assistance to get into the house, you can't be turning around and selling it at market value a year later and making a bucket of money and walking away.
Right.
You know, particularly if that program has been developed with government funding in the first place. That's just wrong. So in BC, in the two programs that I looked at, and one of them is in Langford and one of them is in Whistler, they exercise a restrictive covenant on the resale value. Now, the models that they use is quite different, and I would say, you know, if somebody was looking at this, they might want to look at the model in Whistler as a pretty good example, because it still allows for some equity building on the part of the purchaser whilst still keeping the property affordable.
Right.
So that's one mechanism. All of the other ones that I looked at across Canada use something that's called a shared equity model. So what that means, in a nutshell, is that the organization helps the individual get into home ownership by providing them with a portion of the down payment. Right?
Okay.
And so now the organization, the nonprofit organization itself, is a co-owner in your house, right? And then somewhere up the road, you're going to sell that place, and you're going to sell it at market value.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right?
Mm-hmm. And the organization gets a piece of the action.
And the organization gets a piece of the action.
Oh.
And so then what they do is they take the equity that they have built up over the years, and they build more affordable home ownership. So the interesting difference in these two pieces is that the first one that we've described will have that condo building over there, or that townhouse development is affordable home ownership, period, right? Because you're having price controls on that building.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the shared equity model has sustains or even builds, as we've seen in a few cases, even builds the stock of affordable home ownership homes in the community, but they're fluid. They move around.
Right.
Because
that
when the houses are resold,
yeah,
they're resold in at the market value, mm-hmm, and then mm-hmm, the money is just reinvested mm-hmm in the next project.
We chatted about this. There's a particularly successful group out of Toronto that's doing this.
Hugely successful. Toronto was one of the first places that went into this. They started in the 1990s, the early 1990s, I believe it was. And at the time that I did my research, which is about a year ago now, year and a half ago, they had built up $35 million in their own equity, which they had to spin off into another foundation, obviously.
Wow.
And now that foundation is, their organization is completely self-sustaining, obviously.
Yeah.
They can build whatever they want, wherever they want it. And they're funding social housing projects in their community.
Wow.
So they're not only building home ownership, but they're a funding source for other social service agencies.
Wow.
So it's really quite amazing. So when you look at what can be done, it's very sad that something isn't being done. And the other interesting piece of this puzzle is that the issue of home ownership, there's kind of two pieces when it comes to housing affordability. There's getting in and there's staying in. And when you think about rental rates, the staying in is generally not the issue. You know, when you have people that are making the median income, they can pay the rent.
Mm-hmm.
Oftentimes, they can pay the mortgage.
Right.
They just can't get in.
Right.
So all of these mm-hmm programs actually address the issue of getting in, and because they're median income earners, there's really no concern about staying in.
Yeah. Well, this was the you go to Souk, right? why is there so many people moving to Sucre? Because they can actually afford to get in
to
the market. And they have jobs and they have careers and they're paying the mortgage. It's not a big deal. But to actually buy in Victoria or in some parts of Santa,
you'd have to win the lottery.
That's their best
hope. Or have somebody die.
Yeah, well, or
rob a bank.
Or have rich parents that, you know, give you your down payment money.
All very difficult propositions.
I was just waiting to see if you had more options. What you could do, John.
Just out of curiosity. It
crosses my mind almost weekly.
Do lenders scoff at this shared equity model at all?
No. Actually, the nonprofit organizations partner with CMHC to pull this all together. So, like I say, there's no policy encumbrance for this. CMHC has policy avenues that this can work in. BC Housing has funding avenues to work with developers that want to get into affordable home ownership.
Yeah.
What we have a paucity of, if I dare say so, in Greater Victoria, is we don't have an organization that is willing to take this on. We have the CRD Housing Secretariat. They're not operating in this realm. They're prioritizing, as I said, housing for households that make $50,000 and preferably less. Mm-hmm. So although they're framing that as workforce housing in their documents, it's not.
And CRD Housing is probably the same. Victoria Housing Society.
And Greater Victoria Housing. Greater Victoria Housing Society. Is doing workforce housing.
Oh, okay.
So don't get me wrong. Right. They are doing that, and Pacifica Housing as well. Mm-hmm. But they're doing it in the rental tenure. Nobody is doing
in the
ownership.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. So we have some. I'm not disparaging the work that our housing organizations do.
Oh, they do great work.
They do very good work. Yeah. But nobody is going to this part of the housing. Yeah.
Okay, so
you know what we got to do, John, is we got to bring like somebody from Greater Victoria Housing Society or CRD Housing onto the show.
Well, I'd love to,
and talk about these bigger issues, and ask this kind of question: why don't we? What? Because I'm kind of looking at this. This is ridiculous. We don't have this model because I don't see the downside. Am I missing something?
So at the risk of
well, I'll tell you one of the things, and I'll be quick because I know that we're running out of time. The one thing is that while these organizations are either now self-sustaining or well on their way to becoming so, they do need government help to get kickstarted.
Right.
And they have had government help to get kickstarted. The one in Ontario only had $40,000 to do a business case study, but the rest of them had substantial government help to get started. Some of them had like cash seed money. Some of them had land given to them. Some of them had land loaned to them on a debenture that they had to pay back.
Yeah.
But they all had government involvement in one way or the other. So it takes political will to initiate. Mm-hmm. It also takes the political will to stand back and let the organization run it the way they need to run it.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes the guts to actually stand up and say, you know what, the needs of the working class are important.
I'm voting for you.
Yeah, no, you always say that. You've done an incredible.
Well, I would.
You've done an incredible study here, and I'm quite curious. So, one organization that has done remarkable studies in our community is Community Council. Mm-hmm. Have they never looked at this issue at all?
I did talk to the Community Council as well. They're very interested in this, in the issue of affordable housing.
Yeah.
Home ownership is not within their mandate.
Home
ownership is not within the mandate of any of our organizations.
Interesting.
In Greater Victoria. Okay.
So just before we go, let's leave with a bang.
Okay.
And I say that because I think I'm going to launch Paul again. He hasn't been launched for a couple of months. To what degree does amalgamation or lack of become the reason for lack of priority of this issue?
I've changed my mind, by the way.
Have you?
I actually think Victoria should have 13 municipalities.
Oh.
Well, I mean, it's sensible, right?
Well, no one sees that you're doing funny things with your hair.
Dead air.
So, what do you think? Right. Is that one of, like, we're just sitting back here going, why? And that's something we got to figure out.
Well, I reactionarily, I'm kidding, right? Obviously, but I reactionarily think I blame every issue that does things that don't happen in our region on the fact that we, you know, we're over-governed. But
well, you know, I think that because I'm a policy professional, I think that when you're developing policies, it's always more complicated when you have more stakeholder groups that you have to be able to collaborate with and accommodate all the needs thereof. Now, having said that, does that mean it can't be done? No. Does that mean that it couldn't be done? No. I actually think that in my positive thinking hat, I think that the reason why it's not addressed is because the issue isn't really fully understood. And I think we need to have a real conversation with our political leaders to say, you know what, I know you think you're doing workforce housing, but you're not. And everybody else is. Mm-hmm. Like, do we want to be an economic development engine or not?
Yeah. You know what else I think you should do, Shannon?
What?
You should apply to a TEDx talk.
Oh, yeah?
On this topic.
Crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll hook you up with
that's a neat idea.
On TEDx. Yeah. Because I think more people need to hear about this. Yeah.
Well, I think we haven't scared her away.
Yeah.
Which we do with almost every guest we have.
I know,
But she does seem to know that the two of us from about 20 years back. So we're pretty harmless. So if we're lucky...
Somehow we aged and she didn't.
I know that, and I keep telling her that, and she doesn't tell me why. Needless to say, maybe we will have you back.
Great.
Yeah, and I'd love to. Able I love to explore this with some of the politicians and get to the nub of why not.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay,
sounds
thank
great.
You.
Let's do that.
Thank you so
time.
Much.
You're welcome.
Great to see you again.
We're going, buddy.
Welcome back, John.
It seems that I have forgotten how to do this job. It seemed that we had an endless supply of things to say, and I ran out.
You just ran out.
A minute ago.
Right there.
It was done. The pot is empty.
Yeah.
But it seems to be getting filled up again.
Do you want to talk a little bit about some political things in the region?
Well... I don't think so.
No. We don't want to talk about the
you know what I want to talk about?
The mayor of Saanich not able to get a second for his motion?
I want to talk about how friggin' nice it is to live here.
Yeah.
Because it's so sunny.
Yeah.
And I love this area. What am I... Okay. You want to get me going? Okay. You're getting me going. See how nice I was starting to like the sun. And now I'm becoming grumpy old John again.
Grumpy old John, yeah.
So,
hey, my dad lives in Halifax. So, you know, every day this spring I was thankful.
I got a beef, okay? I got a beef. Yep. I got a beef that we just spend, the collective we, spend way too much time talking about what's of interest to politicians, not what's of interest to people. And I think what's of interest to people is their paycheck, their living costs, their future, security of retirement, and all of that has to do with jobs and sustainability of jobs and economic development. Why does nobody ever talk about that? And the folks that are being successful at creating those things for people, businesses, why don't we ever talk about those things? But we end up talking about everything else but those things.
Yeah.
So do I have... Want to talk about politics? To some degree, I don't. Because they never talk about what's of importance to us.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about that?
You
don't care?
No, I think...
Or Paul, come back!
I think you've clearly identified the power dichotomy. I think you don't... You complain about things that you think you can change. And you tend to just brush over the things that you think can't, right? I mean, you could talk in high levels, but, you know, the world should be a better place and we shouldn't do this and we shouldn't do that. Any ideas as to how one would go about changing that? It's too big for me, right? Your paycheck is something you can do something about it with enough will and effort and determination.
Well, okay, so you want to get to the Saanich thing. Since November, there seems to have been a preoccupation from somebody somewhere of trying to get rid of the mayor. It seems that the mayor has spent most of his time trying to defend himself from whatever.
Mm-hmm.
We have the biggest municipality in our region.
Yeah.
They could be solving the problems of our region unilaterally. Don't get me going, Paul.
Yeah. No, it's...
Don't get me going. I don't know why we can't talk about these things.
It's the Saanich standoff. there's, you know, let's expect nothing good to come out of Saanich for the next 4 years because they're not, clearly just, it's, they're just,
well, hopefully
they're
the closed. Standoff won't.
I don't know.
There, folks.
We're, how far are we into the mandate? There, and the mayor can't get a second for a motion? You know what, John? The mayor, if I was on council and the mayor put forward the most ridiculous motion that he could possibly dream up, I would second it. Because it's the mayor's motion. It should be seconded. You can then
wasn't
talk about it.
Wasn't he democratically elected by people like
exactly,
you and I?
Exactly, right? So you know, love him, hate him, think he's crazy, think he's a normal guy, whatever you want to talk about. At the end
he's
of the,
still the mayor?
At the end of the day, he's the mayor. And a little respect to the office, I think, is in order. And so, you know, shame on any of those councillors sitting in their seat, unwilling to second. When you second a motion, you're not saying you agree with it. There's a fundamental misunderstanding of Robert's rules of order on that council, and it's disgusting.
Wow, this is cool.
I.
What have we been doing for the last 2 months? How have we been getting rid of this angst? This is fantastic. All right.
The outlet is open.
Okay, for the 11 speak listeners who might have remembered last fall, I was adamant that there would have been a federal election before the Duffy trial.
I remember that.
Remember that?
I remember that.
And I was certain that there would be. And I was 1,000% wrong.
Yeah.
So what do you think now? Because clearly my opinion is muck on this issue.
I think living on this island, we have a very different view of politics just generally than the whole rest of the country. And I learned that harshly in the last provincial election. When the Liberals, BC Liberals, surprised the hell out of me by winning more than a handful of seats. Because, you know, I honestly thought they were going down to a Kim Campbell-style defeat in the last provincial election. I've never been more wrong about anything political in my life.
Well, why don't we sort of act semi-Seinfeldish and semi-Georgish?
Yeah.
That whatever we say, the actual opposite is the truth.
It's probably going to happen.
Okay, yeah. So
well, we were really good on the municipal stuff, though.
we were
really close. And you know, a lot of people gave you heck for predicting Lisa Helps in Victoria
for winning.
And honest, yeah, for winning. And I just thought it was.
Still get
I thought it
that.
Was wishful thinking.
Oh,
I thought
you?
It was wishful thinking.
Really, in retrospect,
well, you know
what it was. It interestingly, and we're. Oh, that's
excuse,
an interesting noise.
Excuse you.
It was, from my perspective, less about Lisa Helps winning.
What is going on?
Some sort of construction. See, we're talking about economic development, and immediately construction begins.
We made it excellent.
Yeah.
I'm going to see if it's next door.
The environment of Lisa Helps for me, as much as I admire and respect her, I wouldn't be able to have worked for her in the campaign if I didn't, was more around where young people are going to vote and what they're going to say and are they going to mobilize.
Mm.
And that was the intriguing piece for me. I continue to be intrigued by whether that 25 to 40-year-old voter mobilizes and votes. Because I think if they did, even 15, 20, 25% more than they have been, they become the swing vote.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what intrigued me. To unseat an incumbent mayor supported by a strong provincial party machine, yeah, that was a pretty remarkable thing.
That's a big task, yeah. Nationally, I understand and heard today that the Prime Minister is going to be coming out with a number of policies focused on seniors. And you know how I feel about that. I think seniors in this country, the vast majority of the problems related to seniors have been well taken care of. Not to say there isn't still problems, and obviously there's individuals who suffer from poverty and other things, but by and large, this country has served seniors, I think, very well. I think if the government needs to focus on a demographic, it's the young people that they need to focus on. Why on earth are we spending a small fortune and presumably another additional small fortune when, you know, we're saddling kids with mountains of student debt and, you know, essentially enslaving them for, you know, the first 10 years of their careers?
What at the same time disappoints me and excites me is that to change that paradigm you've just described might require young people to become involved in politics. Because I don't know how a Stephen Harper, he's sitting there measuring where his vote's coming from. And it ain't the 25 to 40-year-olds.
Yeah.
So until they get involved, and to some degree that's what Lisa triggered.
Yeah.
That they're and actually Victoria Council has now quite a few young people on there. I'd like to see them talk more about economic development than bicycles, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
As important as that is, how does, you know, building a sustainable society is pretty important.
Yeah.
And that includes jobs, and it includes a healthy business environment.
Let's talk about Alberta. Poll came out today showing the Progressive Conservative Party in third place, Wild Rose out in the lead, the NDP in second, and I guess, you know, if it wasn't Alberta and what happened there in the last election, the question would be what happened with the Progressive Conservative Party. But because it's happening in Alberta, the question has become, what the hell is wrong with polling?
Well,
because the pundits are still, by and large, presuming a Progressive Conservative majority government, despite the fact that they're third in the polls. So something has actually changed, or polling as a science has completely lost all bearing.
Well, I'm not as familiar with Alberta politics as BC. I thought I was familiar with BC politics, and I got it completely wrong 2 years ago. So I suspect I really know little. But it would appear that the right-wing voter in Alberta actually has a choice, and they can win with either the Progressive Conservative Party or the Wild Rose. And so I suspect that's what's going on. NDP strength is interesting. I don't know where that's coming from. I don't know what, you know, if I were to say the polls are wrong, that's where they're wrong.
Yeah.
People are just pissed off and they're going, I'm going to vote for that person.
I think you hit the nail on the head. I think it's a disaffected voter.
Yeah.
And they don't like either of the two main parties, which Wild Rose and Progressive Conservative, two notably right-of-center parties, have become the two main parties in the province of Alberta.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, which is so strange to British Columbia. But, and so it's the protest vote that's obviously lifting their success, or they're deemed by the polls to potentially be success.
So last time we were very active with JP&M.
Mm-hmm.
Notice how I pulled that out of
yep,
there?
Thank you. Good.
Yeah, yeah.
JPM.
Hey, JPM, we need a little jingle. JPM at 6 o'clock.
We're JPM and we're on the air.
Very good.
So last time
we were chatting,
yep.
Green Party seemed to have had some kind of resurgence. They seemed to have been everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Green this, green that, green everything.
Yeah.
Do you think that's continued? Do you think it's just noise? Will it translate into some sort of political consequence?
I think it will in pockets. I think here locally, my prediction is that the entire South Island, the three seats in the South Island, are going to go to the Green Party in the next federal election. Yeah.
Well, that's very bold of you.
I don't think you're quite bold. I don't think it's that bold. I think Victoria and Saskatchewan Islands definitely. I've heard whisper that there is a potential star candidate for another party to run against Elizabeth May. I'm not going to say who or where I heard it from.
Is it someone who's already run?
I'm not going to say that either. but it is a star candidate. It's a household name. And if that happens, that throws that prediction out the window. And I think in Sooke it's going to be an uphill battle against the incumbent. But I suspect that the Green candidate there, Francis Littman, who is a friend of mine and has taken half of Victoria's photographs over her career, is just an eminently likable person. Is kind of a star in that sense as well. Like, so she's very well known, right?
Well, Paul, I haven't been able to see you or do a podcast since January.
I know.
I've been very busy. Mm-hmm. I am busy diligently trying to provide efficiency and productivity solutions to private sector companies, specifically with learning and training tools, as well as sales and business development tools. And that, if for lack of a better term, consulting practices really has really taken off. So so I wasn't able to chat with you, which I really missed. Okay, mm-hmm. I have to say I really love this stuff. So I'm really glad we're back on track, not as frequently as we were before. We're going to try to get a couple in a month.
Yeah.
But that's a development of mine that was built over 2 years. You've actually had quite a dramatic development. Tell me what you're doing.
I decided that it's no longer my mission in life to change the way Canadians think about their money. So I've made a rather undramatic exit from the financial services industry back to the homeland of IT, where the world that I came from and always had a footprint in, you know, running Social Media Camp. It's hard not to consider that to be information technology. So wearing a few hats. And one of them is here where we're recording today at Train Canada, teaching some courses, including some upcoming courses around social
media.
Hold
on, where are we right now?
This is CTC Train Canada.
Because you kind of dragged me in here, and it was just like, oh, man, this is a fantastic spot.
Right here in the Tectory building downtown.
And it's a great spot.
Yeah, it's great, great people. It's
what
a
do
lot
you
of
do
fun.
Here?
Instructor. So I teach some courses.
And, which ones?
The primarily social media courses.
Wow.
So, I've got a few coming up in May in advance of Social Media Camp.
I can see you being an amazing instructor.
I enjoy it. I enjoy it immensely. And then I'm also a technology ambassador for Smart Dolphins IT Solutions.
Oh, come on. I just love that. I love that title. So if that's an ambassador, do I have to treat you differently? Do I call you royal or honorable?
Yeah. And the stuff I can get away with. Yeah, no, it's...
What do Smart Dolphins do?
Smart Dolphins is a managed IT solutions provider. So if somebody, essentially, the best way to put it is, for a company that's not too small and not too big, they need an IT department, but they probably don't have one internally. So they essentially...
Isn't that 99% of all business in BC?
It's probably not. It's probably not. There's definitely larger businesses, you know, 100-plus sort of workstations, let's say, where they probably have their own IT department. And then there's micro businesses and small, you know, smallish businesses where there's maybe 2-3 workstations, maybe 5, and they don't, you know, they can hack it out themselves and figure stuff out and maybe call somebody in for an emergency. But when it's that middle ground that Smart Dolphin serves, where it's they're big enough to need an IT department but not necessarily big enough to have one. And so Smart Dolphins fills in as a full service IT department, and it's actually a really exciting place to work. It's working with a lot of nerds just like me and super intelligent guys with credentials coming out the yin yang. So I feel very
well. I can't wait to do a JPM show. JPM at 6 o'clock from Smart Dolphins.
Yeah.
And maybe get some pictures and video and chat to the folks there because.
Yeah. Super excited. I got to tell you, my first day there, actually it wasn't my first day, but my first week there, it was the first all staff meeting.
Yeah.
And I walked into the room and the meeting started. The boss interrupted the chair of the meeting. Something was wrong. I didn't know what was wrong. And then suddenly Nerf guns came out and I was pelted with Nerf pellets.
I wish I was
for
there.
The next 5 minutes. You can see the video online. It's a little embarrassing. But
well, let's put it in the show notes because we need to have that video. Well, I can't wait to have and see, learn more about Smart Dolphins.
Yeah.
I can't wait and hear to see more about CTC Canada.
Yeah.
And certainly I'm very excited about our guest today. Shannon Renaud is an international expert on housing related issues, workforce housing, whatever all that stuff means. It's time we figured it out.
Yeah.
Because even though you and I are starting to get our businesses working successfully, there's huge impediments to economic development in this region, and one of them is a lack of affordable workforce housing.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So I can't wait to hear from her,
mm-hmm.
and so glad to get JPM back online.
Back on the air. All right, buddy. Send me the